Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Here we are in 2020, and that means it's time for a fresh start. A good place to begin should be with your bank account, so why not save some cash with our friends at GEICO? With GEICO, it will only take you 15 minutes to save 15% or more on car insurance. GEICO has been offering great rates and great service for over 75 years, and anytime you need help, you can speak to one of their trained specialists 24/7. Go to GEICO.com and start saving cash. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the mean streets of Los Angeles, California today. Hell, I just returned from staying about 10 days out there at the Broken Skull Ranch in the middle of nowhere in Nevada. Son of a bitch, it was peaceful. It was fun. It was good. It was cold, but then it warmed up, and I got a chance to ride all my buggies and my four-wheeler all over the goddamn mountains. Thank you, Nevada. I needed a break from the mean streets of Los Angeles. Boy, where could I take that one? I could take it a million directions, but I'll stick with the task at hand. Welcome to the show. My guest on today's show is my producer, Sean Merrick, host of his own podcast called Worst Collection Ever. It's a comic book podcast. Sean's been hosting my show for, about 4 years. And his show that he hosts along with his wife, Jen, drops every Thursday on Apple Podcasts or wherever podcasts are heard. Man, me and Sean decided to shoot the shit, kick off 2020 in rapid fire fashion. While we were on the phone before and after the podcast, we lined up some details, got some guests lined up, and I think you're going to really enjoy what we got in store for you coming 2020, and we are here. So we're off and to the races. Today on the podcast, man, we call this sumbitch in the ring. We start talking about beer, start talking about football, and end up with professional wrestling, something that I do want to talk a lot more about in the year 2020 than I have in the past, getting back to the roots of what got me to the dance, and that's the business of professional wrestling. I'm going to enjoy this conversation with Sean. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Two cats just shooting a breeze about a bunch of shit. So enjoy the podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Sean Merrick is my guest, producer of my show, and I'll come back and wrap his son of a bitch up. It's good to be back on the airwaves here in 2020. Got some good shit heading your way, and that's the bottom line. Hey, it's a new year, and that means you want to keep growing your team of superstar employees, but you need the right tools to help keep your hiring streamlined and efficient. And that's where ZipRecruiter.com/Steve comes in. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With a powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter find a quality candidate through the site within the first day. Just for listeners of the Steve Austin Show, you can try ZipRecruiter for free when you head over to ZipRecruiter.com/Steve. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/Steve. STEVE to find the ideal candidates for the job. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
All All right, I've been away from Steve Austin's show. I am coming to you from the mean streets of Los Angeles, California today. I got my producer on the line. We're Skyping together. Video right. Style. I got him on my video scope, as Randy Macho Man Savage would say. Sean Merrick is a huge wrestling fan. Been producing my show. How long have we been working together now, man?
I started in 2017 with you, and that would be... So we're going into 3 years.
So we finally got our shit together, and yeah. This is basically my first podcast back since the new year. You did the classics last Thursday. So, Well, welcome to the show. How in the hell are you doing, and what are you doing? We are drinking beer, actually. Cheers to you. I got a Broken Skull IPA going over here. What are you drinking over there?
I am messing with a Avalanche Amber Ale from Breckenridge Brewery because I live out here in Colorado, just outside of Denver. And things are great, man. I am, first of all, I'm honored to be talking to you on a video scope. This is a surreal moment for somebody who's been a wrestling fan his entire life. Things are great, man. You know, it's a little bit nice and chilly out here, but it's still quiet, and I'm doing well.
Well, before we jump into a bunch of talk about pro wrestling and some other shit we were going to talk about, what got you into the craft beer scene?
I don't really say I'm a craft beer guy as much. I just like this brewery. However, my brother is a craft beer connoisseur. So I'm originally from Buffalo, New York. My brother, Brian, is very much into craft beer, and he actually does his own podcast called What the Hops, which is about craft beer. Actually, I brought him when I lived in L.A. I brought him to your stop, the El Segundo, and he dug your stuff. Yeah, I get a little bit of heads up from him. You know, and a lot of people out here, some friends I've met out here, kind of have a...
Hearing that he liked my beer, Sean, tells me that this sumbitch got good taste.
He's got great taste.
You just brought up something. I was going to plug your podcast. Let me go ahead and plug your podcast. You've been doing a podcast for about 6 years with your wife. It's called The Worst Collection Ever. It's a comic book podcast that you do with your wife. It drops every week on Thursdays on Apple Podcasts and wherever you find podcasts. Yep. Man, give me the long story short. How did you start breaking down comic books, and could you come up with this podcast and dropping the 411 that you're doing here?
As far as the podcast goes, my wife, Jen, we've been doing this podcast because I've been a big comic book fan my entire life. And we ended up just somehow amassing a lot of comic books, and especially of the cheap variety, because you can go to a comic book store, especially in L.A. There are so many really cool shops out there that sell comics for like a 25 cents, 50 cents, a dollar. So you could buy, you could get like a whole collection of a certain run for really cheap. And the thing is that, for the really good comics, the ones that everybody reads and stuff that's like, well-regarded and stuff that's like new and stuff like that, I don't really dig that. I like a lot of stuff that when I was growing up, I was just really into these secondary characters and just those kind of deals. So I collect a lot of comics from those things. A lot of stuff from the 90s, early 90s, which is often regarded as being very gimmicky and kind of, of its time. So, a lot of, as you probably can remember, some of the, basically the 90s were like, do you remember those? And actually it was on this list I was going to talk about. Do you remember those stomp figures they made of you guys?
Absolutely.
Yeah, basically, like, comic books in the 90s were those kind of figures, but, like, every book was like that. Everybody had pouches and guns and stuff like that. I have a soft spot for that stuff, and I have a soft spot for the 80s and all that. And my wife, Jen, she's a big Batman fan. She's a big, she's got her own interests in comics, and we just buy a lot of comics, and we were just like, well, we need to justify these purchases because there's no real reason to own that many comics that aren't really worth anything. Like, I got some stuff that's worth stuff, but that's like my dad's, and like it's from the 60s when he was a kid. Everything else is just worth exactly what I paid for it. So to justify that, we decided to do a podcast and talk about those comics and just beat them up.
So you're not afraid to get a set of heat on a comic book?
I'll get heat on characters, whoever. I mean,
hey man, what kind of education you got? If you're breaking down all this literature, because that's what it is, you got a college degree in what?
Oh, well, I've got a college degree. I've got a bachelor's in communications from Buffalo State College. And I don't know if you know this, I have a master's degree in media arts from Emerson College out in Boston. I got a degree in making movies, and I came to L.A. to try to do movie stuff and work in development, and somehow I zigged and zagged and ended up doing podcasting. But yeah, that's pretty much my deal.
Goddamn, I dropped out of North Texas State University with 17 hours to go because I was tired of doing research papers for English, and it broke my parents' heart. But even though I never got a college degree, I got a master's degree in bullshit. So that's my education background. And the thing that I was going to jump upon, because speaking of your love for New York, that's where you're from, right? Buffalo yes. Bills are your team. Goddamn, man, it's been football weekend and all the college football games. We've got the national championship game coming up between Clemson and LSU. But, man, I was down there at the Broken Skull Ranch as you and I were communicating, watching football on Saturdays and Sundays, some epic playoff games. And holy shit, your Buffalo Bills.
Yeah.
They did the favors, but they had a damn chance to win that thing. Sean, what were your thoughts?
I will be the first to admit that I am not as much of a fervent football fan with regards to the Bills unless they're really doing good. And that, I mean, I follow them. And
fair weather.
I mean, look, my day was back in the 90s. Jim Kelly, Bruce Smith, Thurman Thomas, like Kelly's heroes. I mean, good Lord, man. Those guys were gods in Western New York at the time. And that was like my team. Even though we lost those Super Bowls and stuff, and we had those issues, like those guys were just the man. Just the best. But the team now, I watched the game, and I always feel in Buffalo with the football team, with the Bills, we always have a solid defense. It seems like every year we always got some studs on defense. People are it's always like that's like a strength of ours. And then but in the offense is, you know, outside of like the heyday, it's never like as dynamic as like the Patriots, for instance. Like you want to see, like I've always want to watch a game where the Bills are just scoring points and just running through the defenses and just making all these plays, and it never really happens. But they had a great game on Friday, on Saturday. Think about it. They had that last shot at the end of the game, and they had the last shot. It was because of the defense. The defense put up that last goal line stand, and they got all the way down. And it was just because of a bad penalty that they, you know, they couldn't, you know, put it in. But I mean, man, it's.
But dude, they had Deshaun Watson dead to rights in the backfield.
Yeah.
I mean, just two guys smashing into him, didn't wrap up. Deshaun Watson, you know, stayed from Clemson. They won a national championship when he was there.
Yeah.
And he keeps up his winning ways, and he wasn't so hot in the first half as Josh Allen was. And then, boy, it was a flip-flop because Allen really took a dump there in the second half. And when he tried to lateral that ball back as he was going down and making some of the throws and taking some of the sacks that he did. It's a young kid. He's 23 years old. He's going to be a damn good quarterback in the future. But God dang, Deshaun Watson, they had him dead to rights. And that was the play. Well, everything within the game, a play is a play. And it's all about like those. It's funny when those guys are always doing the interviews and they're not giving away too much and they're not trying to be bulletin board material, but they'll always talk about execution, executing plays. They made more plays than we did. And that's what it was. They didn't make that play and they should have.
Credit to Deshaun Watson for getting out of that like he did. I mean, it's one of those things where you see him make a play like that, and it's just like, well, that's just why they're the better team that day. You can't deny that.
Well, yeah. On another day, it might have went the other way because Buffalo could beat Houston just like Houston beat Buffalo. It's all about breaking the plays. But God dang, so many of these guys these days. Here I am, armchair quarterback, removed from football since '87 at North Texas State. You know, a lot of these guys just look to drop that big boom, lower the shoulder. Of course, you can't use a crown of the helmet, and not wrap up, and nobody wrapped up. Nobody grabbed anything, and they just thought the impact was going to bring him down, and it wasn't enough to. So if you went to – if you're from New York and then you spent time in Boston to get that other degree, did you develop any affinity for the New England Patriots? And how did you feel about Tom Brady once that game was over? He goes riding off in the sunset.
All I'm going to say is fuck the Patriots. Fuck Tom Brady.
Tell me how you really feel.
Fuck his Dick Tracy looking jacket.
Come on, man. He's an icon. He's the GOAT.
I'm not saying he's not an icon. It's just, I even when I lived in Boston, I don't care. The Patriots win enough games. I like seeing new things, and I don't care if it's the Bills. I just don't need to see the Patriots, and whatever.
Did you watch the Patriots and the Titans play?
No, I was watching. I was watching Wrestle Kingdom. I had to watch wrestling.
Okay, let's jump into wrestling here in just a second. But God dang, man, Tennessee went in there, and you know they're in Foxborough.
Yeah,
and man, I've been hearing so much about Ryan Tannehill. I've been trying to. I watch as much football as I can, and so I've been hearing all this stuff about Ryan Tannehill. He's throwing the ball. He's great when he's on the move in the red zone. Holy smokes, man! If it hadn't been for Derrick Henry, my man from Alabama, Heisman Trophy winner, Crimson Tide. God dang, man. They started running him. He just started gashing him. He's a leading rusher in the NFL this year. And then they got away from that for a little bit. And all of a sudden, I was like, what in the fuck are they doing? This guy cannot throw the football today. And Derrick Henry is the number one running back in the damn league. And you're not giving him the football. So anyway, finally, they started giving Derrick the football again. And then that's when they started rolling again, got that, what was it, a 1-point lead. And from then, you know, maintained control of the game. But it could have went any way in the world.
Okay. Super Bowl coming up. Who's in it? Who wins?
Oh, God dang, man. I'm just going into next week. I can't go no further than next week. I'll pick up this conversation with you on another one, but I don't know who's going to head into it because I've been on the go so much. I had a bunch of stuff scrambling around down at the Broken Skull Ranch in Nevada, and coming back, I don't have all my notes in front of me, but I will give you a prediction on that.
Yeah.
You brought up something just a while ago about Wrestle Kingdom. What was that, number 14?
Yes.
And you watch the event. I didn't get a chance to see it. I was out riding my buggies and raising hell and drinking margaritas. I got to jump back on my I talked a little bit about New Year's resolutions last time on a podcast with my buddy Jim Irwin.
Yeah.
Shit, goddamn, Sean, I just come back from Nevada. I got to dry out. I'm going to hit the Betty Ford Clinic. Son of a bitch. I want to get back to watching more professional wrestling. I didn't see Wrestle Kingdom 14. Did you like the event? Or not like the event?
I liked it. I don't get a chance to watch enough New Japan as it is, but I do have an NJPW account. And I made it a point this year to watch it. And I really enjoyed it. I think the Kota Ibushi and Jay White, that was on night two. That was an excellent match, as well as Kota versus Okada. Just, I don't follow their angles as much, but I know who all the players are. And I like what they're doing with Kota. They're doing a thing where he's like, he gets to a point where the guys start unloading on him and he just no-sells it. And he just comes back with just a fury, just kicking and, you know, slapping and stuff. And that was really cool. And I'm just kind of going around between both nights. I watched Jericho and
Tanahashi.
Tanahashi.
How was that?
Chris was good. Chris could still go. I mean, he's such a versatile player, and a guy like Tanahashi, it was a really cool melding of styles, and I like that match a lot.
What kind of time did they put in?
Oh, they put, I think it was like at least a half hour.
Yeah, I was figuring Jericho likes to go long. He likes to tell stories. And he's one of the smartest guys you'll ever see in a wrestling ring.
Yeah.
I knew that we were going to have this conversation. I got on YouTube. I tried to find a match. All I could find was about 3.5 to 4 minutes of highlights. And so there were highlights, and highlights are the highlights of a match. But just in looking at them, I was like, well, they definitely had some good shit in there. And knowing Chris, like I know him, he really, you know, he's one of the more cerebral guys in the business, and as a student of the game, knows how to build a match. And so it looked like there's some really cool shit in there. I'll go back and watch the event in its entirety.
There was more stuff in the ring too. It wasn't as much of his brawling that he was doing in NJPW, you know, with his matches like with Omega and stuff like that. Like it was more in ring stuff. Although there was some stuff outside that you know, factors into the overall match. But that was a good bout. God, I watched the Liger's bouts, you know,
can he still move?
Oh yeah, he looked, I mean, they did, for what it's worth, he didn't do a ton. Like, he was, the matches he had, you know, were, looked like they were meant, like, he lost both matches, and it looked like they were not easy, but like, there wasn't, they weren't like super crazy, like brain busters off the top rope and stuff like that. But he hit the special, you know, he hit his, all the good stuff, and you know, it was fun to watch.
I don't know how that guy is still around. I remember back in the day, it was, hell, if it was 91, 92, 93 at the latest. I can't remember. Maybe you know this.
In WCW?
Yeah, WCW 92, the match with Brian Pillman. Mm-hmm. Okay, that was the match of the year.
Yes.
Go back and watch that match. It's like 12 minutes. This is how much the business has changed. The stuff they were doing back there was cutting edge. But, you know, well, mm-hmm. Dynamite was doing it with a Tiger Mask. But, I mean, it was a great match. And but just to see that guy from back then, and I've seen a million of his matches, to think now in 2020 that guy is still going is unbelievable. He's a compact guy. And I think they probably absorbed the punishment and the gravity and the physics better than the longer guys.
Yeah.
But I still know after all those years, all those bumps, the high rate working style that he had back in the day, that he's got to be beat to shreds.
Well, he also had a brain tumor at one point, and he
came back. Didn't know that.
Yeah, I believe that was a situation where he took some time off because he had a brain tumor that he had operated on, and he returns. But yeah, no, it was fun. It was fun to watch though. And you know, it's, you know, he's brought so much to the business. And I always have trouble kind of glomming onto New Japan stuff because I don't really know what the characters are, but it's the work and just like the presence by which these guys carry themselves is what draws me in. I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, it does, because as you were talking earlier, you said you hadn't been really following New Japan angles, but you appreciate the work style and just turning it on because it was on, although you hadn't been following it. And what maybe the angles were going into the event, you like the style. So how long have you been watching the business? Long? Forever?
I can remember watching the business back when I was like 5 years old.
You being a pure wrestling fan, pro wrestling fan, smart to the business, obviously, knows what's going on. What are you looking for? What do you like, just as far, you were talking about presentation, way the guys carry themselves. Do you want the overly dramatic storylines, or do you want to see more the work? What do you want? And I keep rambling on. I'm real shitty at this. I've only been doing it 6 years, and I can ramble on a question. Just
present. I'll edit this all out.
Present it as a shoot, or give me your take. What's your feel? Let's work on this.
So with me as a wrestling fan, I don't watch the TV on a regular. I follow it, so I know everything that's happening, and I watch all the pay-per-views. We're talking WWE specifically. Being invested in certain angles nowadays, I don't really have as much desire to, but back, you know, when you were at your height of your powers, and even before that, you know, in the early, you know, the late 80s, early 90s, you know, I watched all the time. So I was able to follow along certain angles and have a lot of fondness for that stuff. You know, like, for instance, Jake Snake and Macho Man, and, you know, that whole business. And, you know, like, I'll see videos of that stuff and I'm just like, well, that's what I like. You know, I like to be able to see something that is, in a way, like, it's not drawn out, but it's also, it's long enough for there to be an impact and something to remember. And that's, as far as like from a storytelling standpoint, as far as from like wrestling, actual like in-ring presentation, I like seeing new stuff. Like, I remember back in the day, like before I was switched on to the internet as much as I, you know, obviously am now, I liked being able to watch TV and then be like, oh, there's a new guy here. Who's this new guy? What's he going to bring to the table? What's going to happen, you know, down the line? You know, kind of like, you know, like The Undertaker debuting and being like, okay, here's a new gimmick. You know, what's going to happen? Or maybe there's a wrestler that, like, I'm just using him as an example, like a Tatanka. You know, somebody who I read After Mags all the time. I loved them. I still
Pro Wrestling Illustrated, all that stuff.
Pro Wrestling Illustrated, yeah. Inside Wrestling, all those things. So I learned about everybody through those magazines. Remember all the rankings, all the names. So Chris Chavis from South Atlantic Pro Wrestling, and he's going to the WWF to be known as a character known as Tatanka. Well, I already know who that guy is, but I'm like, okay, what's this going to do? What's going to unfold? And I don't know anything about the backstage machinations. So, you know, it's all new to me. And I like that sort of feeling. And I like that when I see that today in like a thing like NXT, because I watch NXT more regularly than – I think that's the most regular program of wrestling I watch straight up like nowadays. And I like it when, you know, we're bringing in guys like Damian Priest or any new character, you know, like a Velveteen Dream or Matt Riddle. I'm just like, you know, when you're debuting those guys and I'm like, okay, where's this going to go? How are we going to – play this out? How are we going to get them? You know, I mean, obviously the fans in Full Sail, they have an advantage because a lot of them are very familiar with these folks and they're very excited for them. But like, you know, how's this going to match up to the main roster? You know, and so that gets me really excited. And I like watching that. And the in-ring product, you know, as far as the stuff like NXT, like I prefer that more because it's more like when I was watching Wrestle Kingdom, the matches, you know, they're longer, they're just harder hitting. Not to say that there isn't stuff on the main roster isn't like that, but it seems like there's more of a affinity to do that in NXT, and it resonates with me more.
What is it about the presentation NXT versus like a Monday Night Raw or Friday Night SmackDown?
I think with NXT, and at least at this moment now where they're just doing it Full Sail, it's stripped down. It's more compact. What are the things, for instance, and I'm just going to kind of tie this into another thing I really love, which is video games. I've been playing the WWE 2K game forever. And the one thing I've always wanted is for them to put in a TV studio setting that you can customize and do matches in, because everything else is in a big setting. It's in the big arenas and all that stuff, which is fine because that's where wrestling happens. But wrestling also happens in the TV studio. That's what it happened before. And I want to be able to do that. And I like what it's stripped down. It's more no nonsense. I mean, there's a huge crowd at Full Sail every week, but you know, it doesn't feel so open. It's a, kind of like that thing where you feel everything's so wide that it feels claustrophobic, you know, kind of in the main roster at times. But that's why I like something like NXT. I just like that presentation.
When I watch the NXT show, like I said, I think it's a little more stripped down from a production standpoint. Obviously, very high production. I love the enormity of Monday Night Raw or Friday Night SmackDown, but I just kind of like it. It ain't grassroots because it's bigger than grassroots, but it's a little bit more honed in, I guess, for me. And I sometimes being at that Full Sail, it's not like studio wrestling, but it's a little bit more like it in a way.
It's in the middle.
It's a little bit more intimate setting because, I mean, sometimes the crowds aren't so hot from an audible level. You know, you can feel that energy just coming in. I don't know. It's just an interesting product. And I think there's great, great talent on all the different, you know, the SmackDown, Raw, or NXT. I mean, great, you know, really, really good talent. As far as stylistically, coming up from myself, some of my favorite wrestling is late 80s. Mid-Atlantic or Mid-South Power Pro, NWA, World Class when it was hot. And I started there in the back side of that in 89 when it's starting to tail off. USWA at a point in time, you know, that type of work when it was a little bit more gritty, just slower moving, not near as athletic as it is today. And as a wrestling fan, just as far as work styles or what you're into, what captivates you? Is it that hard-hitting style from – I'm going to send you this match. It's Harley Race versus Terry Funk in 77 from Sam Houston Coliseum in Houston, Texas. And you'll wonder how – you'll wonder why he started bleeding because – you won't wonder why he's bleeding because Harley Race is wearing him out with a big left hand. But how he starts bleeding, it was like super, super fucking magic in the ring. And it went 40 minutes to it, best to have three falls. Stylistically, work-wise, what are you looking for as a fan?
I like heavy, hard-hitting action, but I also like it when it's toned, when it's not like super like choreographed at the same time, but I also like seeing athleticism. I'm a very basic kind of fan in a way. Like, I'll be happy watching a squash, like a nitro squash, but I'll also be happy watching a cruiserweight battle. And it's not something where, you know, but also I want to see, you know, two hosses fight, you know, I want to see just hard hitting. And I'm a big like moves guy. And I know that sounds weird, but it's like, I like, you know, if somebody's doing a move, like I love, like, Rikishi used to do it, and Bam Bam Bigelow used to do it. It was like the greetings from Asbury Park, like a over the shoulder pile driver. And it's just something like that. It's just like, you know, it's just so devastating looking. And it's kind of like, if you're watching a match, you know, whether it's a squash or it's something that leads up to that move, and you get those kind of moves in, and it's like, man, that's awesome, you know, and you just get fired up. But also, another to that point, and I know I'm all over the place with this, but like, I like the Gaga, and I'm just using that term because it's the best way to describe it. And I was thinking about this today because I know we're going to talk. One of my favorite matches I saw recently is Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair retirement match, Halloween Havoc 1994 in a cage. Do you remember that match?
Man, barely.
And maybe we should, you know, maybe we should watch that match together, because it's an interesting match, because it's like, you know, it's Hogan doing Hogan, it's Flair being Flair, and in a cage, and then like Sherry comes in, she's like bumping and just going nuts, and then what's his face? Bruce Beefcake comes in, he's wearing a whole mask and stuff because he tapped Hogan, and then he's trying to get in, and Hogan's hitting him with a stick, and I just was getting fired up watching it. I'm bored for that. And I also, man, when I was, I think my favorite time of wrestling was probably between 96 and like 2000, because I did discover ECW in that time period, and it was such a crazy presentation. Like, anytime people see hardcore matches and people are like, my god, that's barbaric, I'm like, that doesn't faze me at all. And I kind of like seeing that, because there's a science behind that, and I like seeing that sort of spectacle and stuff. So, but I mean, it's kind of like a thing where at times you need a palate cleanser when you watch wrestling. Like, if you ever feel that way, like where you're sitting around, you're like, all right, I'm in the mood to watch a bunch of squash matches. There's an account on YouTube, Monsoon Classic, who uploads a lot of stuff from like different shows. And like recently, he actually had a Superstars from 96 and you wrestling the Stalker, and, you know, just a bunch of other matches surrounding that. And it's just like, I just want to see like just a nice compact match, you know, two pros going at it. There's a finish and that's it. You know, so sometimes I'll do that as like a palate cleanser, but then like I'll be in the mood to like watch a long NXT match, or maybe I want to watch like an ECW pay-per-view. I'm going all over the place.
Let me read you back in. So it's good talent having great matches, because the match is structured in a fashion that it makes sense. But then you bring in the bells and whistles, like the trash can or this, the barbed wire. So you bring in those outside things that all tie it in. So it's bigger, better, or you have more components to work with, but within a setting where, and in a context that it makes sense that they would be there. Going back to the ECW thing, and you start talking about the hardcore matches. I've had a couple of death. What are the guys I've had on death match guys?
Mondo and all.
Yeah. Yeah. When you were talking about the guys in ECW with the hardcore matches, it made me think of some of the guests I've had on the shows in the past year, mm-hmm. 2 years, that specialize in the death matches. Where are you at with that? Did you enjoy watching those kind of matches?
There's parts of me sometimes where I'm just, again, I'll just be in the mood, and it's like, I just want to watch some CZW insane shit happening, and I just want to see what it was like. And because I never really, you know, I wasn't like downloading those tapes and watching those tapes and like a lot of people were back in the day, back in like the early 2000s. But I just want to see that, and I'm totally cool with it, because it is what it is. You know, it's just two guys or girls or whoever, they're doing insane stuff, but they're also like trying to protect themselves and trying to make it as believable as possible. And I like just seeing this, not just sometimes it's nutso stuff like that. So I'm cool with it. Like, I was there. Speaking of David Arquette, talked about him just before we started taping. I was there when he had that match with Nick Gage. And
that scared him.
Yeah, well, I would be scared too, but he was, and I'm starting to scare him as he was going through it, but he was taking some chances. I mean, it was just wild just watching that. And it was also one of those things where I think it was almost some of the most fun I've had at a wrestling show in a long time, because, you know, the thing comes out in the crowd and you're just like, oh my God, I got to get out of the way, because I don't want anything near that stuff. I don't want to get hit. I don't want to be anything near that stuff. But the frantic energy of those kind of matches is it's unparalleled. And, you know, just watching it on TV or being there in person, I'm down with it.
Learning the business when I learned it at Gentleman Chris Adams Wrestling School, and then being a 1990 Rookie of the Year, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, all those awards and rankings are a shoot. I was in the classic mold of pro wrestling, but, you know, I never was really that attracted to the deathmatch stuff until I started researching some of the guys that would be on the show. And some people think, oh, that's garbage. Anybody can do that. No. Anybody can't do that. It takes a very, very special person or a person who's wired differently to do that and do it in the fashion that they're doing it. I've enjoyed watching so many of those matches. Now, I would never personally do them. I think they're too dangerous. But, man, I really enjoyed watching the damn fluorescent. I've been in some scraps with some bullshit. But, I mean, some of the bumps those guys took, falling through that damn truck with the headache rack on it, you know, Joey Janela stories and Nick Mondo stuff. I enjoy it in doses, and then I need a palate cleanser. But I will say this. I can't watch too many of them because it's just so violent and so precarious, so dangerous that sometimes it scares the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Going back to this, I want to turn the microphone over to you because I know you got some questions from back when I was running hot. But going back to the squash matches, you know, I love a good squash match. Back in the day when you came into a territory or someone was coming into a territory, you know, man, there's going to be that sacrificial lamb. And say it's Bruiser Brody. Here comes Brody. Well, goddamn, basically anybody in the locker room could be that guy that's going to do the favors for him in a real spectacular fashion of being about 100% offense on Brody's part. And there's an art to the squash match.
Yes.
And getting over. And I enjoy watching those in a different fashion than let's go to WrestleMania 3, Savage Steamboat. Okay, spectacular, one of the best matches in the history of the business.
Yeah.
But there's an art into going into a territory and trying to establish a character and a dominance presence or a step in getting over in having a squash match and conducting it in a fashion which is conducive to laying the groundwork for you getting over.
Right, and I want to say for squash matches, to me, I loved watching them, and I love continuing watching them, particularly for a new wrestler. And NXT still kind of does this in a way where it's a new guy. I don't know much about him. What's his character? What's his finisher? How should I connect to this guy knowing that he might hit a certain move and win that match? Because that, as he goes along and as he gets into different programs, I will get more excited to see him do his thing and potentially win or lose and add the drama to the match. And as a I like reading like Wikipedia or lists and things that are like, here's this guy's history, here's this guy's stats, here's this guy's finisher. I like knowing that. Like when I play the wrestling games, I make a lot of characters, and I make a lot of guys too that aren't like, you know, like just your normal wrestler, you know, like all the characters that everybody knows. I remember years ago we had a commercial for WWE 2K, and I made you say that I have a Ron Bass created character, and I do. That is a shoot, but I also like, I want to be able to have an accurate finisher for him, so I will watch a squash match with him in it so I could see, oh, he used to do the claw, and then he had that weird proto pedigree move or whatever he did. But I like knowing that stuff. And so the squash matches feed that need for me, and it establishes these characters not just as a character but as an athlete. And I mean, take for instance for yourself. I watched that Barry Windham match, right? It was on Superstars. It was, I think it was either October or November. No, maybe it was December. I think it was December 96. And you're using the stunner, but it was still like, it was in that stage where things were still kind of working out. And you hit the stunner on him as he's kind of like coming up over you to pick you up from behind you. You just kind of hit it. And it doesn't look like he doesn't sell it like every like people would sell it like, oh my God, the stunner, but he sells it and that's the move and that's your move. And so seeing the match where you kind of hit like a stunner that is sort of like that and it eventually evolves into like a to what it was is very fascinating to me. And you need that sort of – I feel like wrestling needs that sort of connection, you know, kind of thread when it comes to putting wrestlers out there and showing who they are and what they do.
Hey, Jordan here. I know a lot of you create your own podcast, and a lot of you already have one like me. I obviously love what I do. It's taken a lot of hard work to get to this point of success. You shouldn't have to pay fees for platform hosting, distribution, analytics, or fees to create a podcast. You need to be able to focus on producing the best show possible. Now, Podcast One, that's the network I'm on, they have Launchpad Digital Media, or Launchpad DM for short. So it's free, includes unlimited hosting, full control of distribution. You have access to a full dashboard with analytics. Again, totally free. You own everything, by the way. You own your content, you own your subscribers, no tricky stuff there. And you get your own show page on launchpaddm.com for people to listen to and subscribe to your show. It's the only hosting platform brought to you by the leading network, Podcast One. Podcast One will promote the site, drive people to discover your podcast, and if your show grows, you could even be invited to join Podcast One's all-star roster, which includes people like Adam Carolla, Caitlin Bristow, Shaq, Lady Gang, and of course, me, Jordan Harbinger. I'm there too. You also get access to their production and sales support. So with all this completely free, don't use other hosting platforms. Why would you need to? Learn more or sign up now at launchpaddm.com. And don't forget to check out the Jordan Harbinger Show.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
I'm going to pour me another beer, and you had a couple questions you wanted to ask me, so I'm fixing to turn over the microphone to you. So obviously you'll edit this out. I'll be back in 10 seconds.
As Steve's getting his beer, I'm going to talk and tell you about the wrestling figures that I have in my collection case here. I have a very limited collection. I have mostly comic book characters and a bunch of other weird stuff. But so I'm looking at right now, I've got an Aleister Black NXT figure. I've got a AWA Remco Baron Von Raschke. I've got a Mattel Goldust. I love the way Goldust looks. I have an Abdul the Butcher Classic Superstars. And I have a Harley Race Classic Superstars that I found for a great deal. And I also have a Andre the Giant Hasbro that isn't in great condition, but I bought it for $8. And I've always wanted Andre. I was killing time while you're gone, but I'm going to finish my deal here. And last but not least, I have a Ted Arcidi WWF LJN figure. I made a movie called Smark. And Ted Arcidi was the antagonist in that movie because he lives out in New Hampshire, and I got to work with him.
You did?
Yes, I did.
Dude, here's something you don't know. Well, you do know. You used to work with Ted. Okay. Ted was like Triple H as a gym guy. He's always followed bodybuilding and powerlifting. Although I never was a body guy, I was always a gym guy, and I followed, you know, muscle and fitness, goddamn powerlifting USA. I was big into the bench press, deadlift, and squat, and Arcidi was king when he benched 705.
That's right.
No one ever thought a human being would bench 705, and here comes Ted Arcidi, and he does. Then he gets in the wrestling business. So Ted Arcidi was highly revered, not as a worker among the guys, but as that guy that was the first motherfucker to bench 705. He was the man. What kind of guy was he?
He was delightful. The man could put away a pizza. I watched him do that. Just a delightful man. He actually had some roots in Buffalo, so we got connected over that. And it was interesting to work with him.
Is he still with us?
Yes.
Okay. Hello, Ted Arcidi. Hit me with a couple of questions.
All right. So, I wanted to talk. I have a bunch of stuff, but I don't want to keep it for too long. So, I think what we'll do is I want to ask you about video games and some music. Okay.
Yep.
Your first video game that you appeared in was WCW Main Event on Game Boy in 1994. When that came out, were you aware and did you play it?
No, I didn't play it, and I wasn't aware of it.
When did eventually did you become aware of it?
I never have until you just told me.
Yeah. So you're in it, and Johnny B. Badd's in it, and Vader's in it, and Ron Simmons and Sting and Rick Rude, and it's a very basic game. I don't know, maybe it's just my personality, but like, if going into the business and knowing that those things exist, do you ever have any like heightened like awareness of that sort of stuff? Like, man, okay, you know, I work for this company, WCW, and they have, you know, these sort of, you know, they promote, you know, they have licensed properties and stuff like that. And then I'm talking about maybe for back then, you know, like in the early 90s when you're WCW, did you ever like think like, you know, because obviously other guys like Sting and, you know, Vader and Cactus Jack, like they're on a lot of those things too. Did you ever have any like perspective on that stuff when that back then?
No, didn't have any perspective on it because you knew the guys that you mentioned, like Sting and those guys were the guys, and they were getting the top dollars. You come in there, you're on a guaranteed salary, but there's no bells and whistles after that. They say, hey, you're going to be in a video game. Man, back in the day, you didn't give a shit, you know, a video game, man. I wasn't into them. Well, nowadays, I mean, it's always been big money, but now it's huge money, right? So,
yeah.
So now you're much more keen and aware of those things, of these things. But back in the day, you know, you signed a couple of those starving rock and roll artist contracts where, you know, you're in it. You ain't necessarily going to get paid, you know, leaps and bounds above anything else other than what you were going to make. So you didn't really give a shit back in the day.
Right.
These days, and everybody always moving forward, hell yes, you're aware of it.
When you moved on to the WWF and eventually, you know, you were hot as shit, you know, back in the 90s, they put out eventually Warzone. And, you know, obviously No Mercy, were those more on your radar or was it still a thing where you're just like running so hot that, you know, you just don't have time for it?
By that time I was running so hot, you know, it was a big deal and I won't talk dollars, but I mean, yeah, I was, everything was just flying so high, so fast, so hot. You didn't pay attention to it, but man, I mean, because they advertised that, you know, during the show, and it was a spike of adrenaline every time they advertised that thing. So yeah, those were cool to be a part of.
So there's two games actually that I wanted to bring up. One in particular was called WWF Betrayal, which was out on Game Boy Color in 2001. And this is not a wrestling game per se. It is a beat 'em up, where you or the players could choose between, I believe it's you, The Rock, Undertaker, and I think Triple H. I should have had this up, but basically Stephanie gets kidnapped and you have to go save her at Mr. McMahon's behest. And on the way you fight referees and so, you know, and other ne'er-do-wells backstage. Were you aware of this one at all?
No.
Did you just find out about it now?
Yes.
Yeah. Man.
I had no idea, dude.
Oh, man. I'll tell you, next time I'm in town, we're going to do a video game stream, and we're going to play this dumb game.
Okay, and, yeah, no, I wouldn't wear that.
And then last but not least, as far as video games go, there was also WWE Crush Hour. Now, this is a racing game. We're not a racing game, but more of a demolition derby game. Now, you as a car guy figured you might have been aware of this. This came out in 2003 for GameCube and PS2, and it was basically a bunch of WWE-themed monster trucks with weapons, and you just drove around and, like, shot each other.
First off, sounds like a hell of a damn game. Was I aware of its existence? Absolutely not. And then in 2003, shit, I guess that's when I rode off in the sunset. Oh, there was a lot of things going on back then. I think, you know, hell, I was beat to shreds, or I was probably the co-GM with Bischoff, which I really enjoyed, but my head was elsewhere, and I do not remember that.
Right on. All right, so let me see if I can pull this up. So I pulled up your first WCW theme. Thoughts on that one?
I never ever really paid attention to that song when I was walking out in WCW. I could hear the music in the background. I didn't really know who and what Stunning Steve was. That was my character, or that was my gimmick. I don't really think I really truly found myself or my gimmick until I turned into Stone Cold. So it's kind of like background noise. I never really paid attention to it, and I didn't draw any energy off of it. But, you know, I was playing the part. I probably didn't really know who I was at that time when I look at that footage back. But I watched some of the highlights. I mean, man, I really did some really good, you know, mechanically did some really good stuff in the ring. To answer your question, though, didn't really pay attention to it as I was walking down to the ring. It didn't make me feel a certain way.
Okay. So there's another
And that's one very important because, man, that music is everything.
Yeah. No, I could imagine. Like, and it's funny because you've talked about on the show before about how when you first started out, and you would be like, you bring a tape to the sound guy and be like, hey, can you play, what was it, Van Halen Unchained?
It was Unchained.
Unchained, and yeah. And then, so, you know, that's your jam. But, like, you get to the big time, and they give you this, and it doesn't even, you know, it doesn't really fit you yet. But,
dude, when I was walking out there in USWA, and I went down there, I think we was at the Mid-South Coliseum at night, and I asked that dude to play that song for me, and he goes, hey, man. He goes, you got to be in the business, you know, 8-10 years to get music played here. This shit don't just happen. I mean, he was harsh. And I was like, dude, can you please just play the music? I've been in the business, what, 3, 4, 5, 6 months? And because I had nothing, I had long blonde hair, had a pretty decent physique, but I couldn't work worth the shit. I was green as grass, didn't know what the fuck was going on. At least give me something to entertain these motherfuckers with, which is a badass Van Halen song called Unchained. Yep. So I felt something when I was going to the ring. I had just a little boost of confidence walking to the ring. Now, when the bell rang, it all went to shit. But that song made me feel something.
So this next song I want to discuss is called Satan's Sister, which is apparently the title of it. It's your second WCW theme that you had when you were in the Hollywood Blonde.
That brings back a lot of memories. When they hit me with that, they didn't say, hey, Steve, we've got some music going to run by you. And all of a sudden, I just remember walking out, and, man, I was a television champion at that time, whatever. That made me feel something. I was kind of starting to find myself in that role. It was still Stunning Steve, but I kind of knew who and what I was at that point. And when that music hit, I was pretty damn cocky. I was pretty damn confident. And, you know, I was ready to go. And mechanically, I was very proficient. So,
and it's got groove to it. And I feel like you can walk in step to that.
Correct.
I don't know if you're aware of this, but they have reused that theme for other wrestlers in WCW.
Who?
I distinctly remember Greg Valentine coming out on a Nitro to that song.
Well, that's bullshit. They should have never done that, but Greg Valentine, second generation, I believe. So anyway, Greg Valentine's right. Greg Valentine, so that's okay. If you'd have told me somebody else, I might have been mad at you.
But I know there's a few other people because that song, like, and also like Lex Luger's song back when he was in the 90s, and that they would have like a generic track. You would actually hear those tracks, and same thing with the Hardys theme. You would hear those tracks on, like, on Sports Center in the background during highlights. It's something of, like, the Arn Anderson, the Horseman theme. They would use those for just multi-purpose, not just in wrestling. So, but yeah, but that Satan's Sister.
Dude, that was a pretty goddamn good entrance song. And here's the thing, like, because you hit it right on the head, like as far as walking down, stepping in rhythm to something.
Yeah.
Man, if you go back, to King of the Ring and Milwaukee, Wisconsin at the Mecca Arena. They're playing my music. I'm walking out. And, dude, watch how I'm walking. I'm shuffling out there. I just still had kind of come into the company. Mm-hmm. I was stone cold, but I really hadn't found the everything of stone cold. I was about to cut the promo, Austin 316, because Stone Cold said so later that night. But watch how I'm walking out there in that first match. It's like I don't know who I am. This music doesn't fit me, and I'm just kind of shuffling my feet. You know, and I had two key victories that night. Mark Merrow kicked me in my mouth. You know, thank you, Mark, because that went to the hospital, and that's when I came back from the hospital. Doc Hendricks tells me about the Jake promo, and that gives me inspiration to come up with the Austin 316 promo. Needed to button on the end of the promo because Stone Cold said so. So all that shit happened. But you go back and you watch me walk to the ring, and it's like, this doesn't fit. Who is this guy? Jay Brown City. And goddamn, all of a sudden, 2 hours later, I got two grand slams. Austin 316 because Stone Cold said so. But watch me walk to the ring. There's no rhythm there, and there's no cohesion, and I am lost.
I'm going to go back and look at that.
It's weird. Okay. And then, not to cut into your next question, but when we come up stone cold, and then I pitched Jim Johnson that idea for, Rage Against the Machine, Bulls on Parade. He came up with what he came up with. But, dude, that crash, that glass, and the way that thing hits, and my attitude, my mindset, when I fully evolved that character, fucking money.
Yeah. No, hell yeah. And I actually played Jim Johnson's episode that you did on this show not too long ago on there. And so we got – I remember him saying that. And, Your WWF theme is just, it's got that, it's kind of like an evolution of your WCW theme, not on purpose, but just like it's the groove. And that's something that Jim would say. I remember there's that one, I think it was in Beyond the Mat, where he's talking about like creating Vader's music. And he's like, okay, well, Vader's a big guy. And he goes, it's like, der, 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 or whatever, however it went. Yeah. But just, it's, yeah, he's that guy's awesome. Okay. Last one. This song is called Oh Hell Yeah, by the band H Blocks. You filmed a video for this. Should we watch this video?
Dude, let me click on this.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have laughed. I watched that video for the first time in years last night.
Dude, I go ahead.
It's pretty wild. I want to know how you were pitched this, because basically, for those of you that haven't seen it, it's like Gulliver's Travels, but in Los Angeles and a new metal band on a rooftop.
Here's the thing, man. When they pitched that idea, it sounded pretty cool, right? And then when it came to execute, I thought they did a pretty interesting take on the song, but it's not about the song. So the song, musically, it's kind of cool. When you watch the video, it's basically like when you watch Spinal Tap and they drop Stonehenge. So I was supposed to be this kind of like this giant walking. I was bigger than the city. But when it came down to the way it scaled out or the way it looked, I mean, the guys at WWF back in the day did not like it at all. They said, no, fuck that. We ain't never playing this shit. And so it ended up on YouTube. But yeah, they didn't like that shit at all. What did you think about it? Because I just remember doing it. And, you know, like when you're doing something for the first time and someone's guiding you or directing you through this process, you're just doing it. But as I was watching it, it comes off lethargic, non-energetic, not intimidating. And I've only watched just a few seconds of it, but I remember the higher ups at WWF were not pleased with the outcome.
I can understand why.
Nor were they in charge of it.
Yeah, as a song, back in that time period, I was a nu metal guy, still kind of am, and I remember that band. I remember other songs from that band. And it fits right. It kind of hits me in a very nostalgic place with that kind of music. So it's a perfectly cromulent song for a take, new metal take on your theme. And you're correct. I only remember seeing it once, I think, on TV. And I don't think it was on. That song itself was on the WWF, the Music Volume 4, which obviously it was a big deal at the time because, you know, the company was so hot and just the music was so hot. The video, there's like so many weird. First of all, there's a part where, and you probably obviously didn't get to it, you pick them up in your hand.
Yeah.
And you let, because there's two singers. This is one of those bands with two singers. I think there's only four members of the band. And for some reason, there's two singers. And they walk up on your shoulder and they start singing the song into your giant ear. And at one point, the one guy kicks you and you kind of react a little bit slowly, like, what the fuck? And then you put them gently back down and then you just continue walking through downtown Los Angeles. And there's a lot of shots of people reacting to seeing you, but obviously you're not there. It was
bad. It was real bad. But, you know, when they pitched it, it sounded good. It sounded like, hey, this is next level. Let's give this a shot. It didn't turn out so great. And like I said, man, where they played it one time, I mean, it pretty much got buried pretty quick.
I can understand why. Eventually that was followed up with the Disturbed's take on your song. And that Disturbed was, first of all, much better band and much just a better presentation overall. And that one, I think, stuck around. I think when you were during the invasion times, but
yeah. When I turned over heel, but you know, H Blocks, I thought they did a good take on the songs.
Yeah.
Down stylistically, musically, doing what they did visually, hell no. And then when I hooked up with the Disturbed guys, Dave Germain and all those guys were really, really cool. I thought they knocked it out of the park when they did my song. Now, of course, I love coming out to that song, but I always like coming out to the classic first original version.
Yeah.
Most, but I like the different incarnations of the song as we went along the way.
Last question regarding that video. If you were a legit giant, like let's say you got a hold of some Pym particles, this is all for my comic book folks, then you got some Pym particles, you became Giant Man, Giant Austin, and now, but you didn't know what happened. Now you're up and you're like,
yeah, I got an answer for you, Sean. Los Angeles. We don't know why.
I think I know why, but go ahead.
Tell me why you think why.
Because it'll be a lot easier to avoid the traffic and get to where you need to go and bypass the 10 by walking over the bridge.
You're partially correct. Because also, if I'm a giant, I can pick up the Priuses with my pointy finger and my thumb, pluck out the driver who's got a cigarette that they're fixing to drop on the pavement, put the Prius underneath my foot, and smash it into the ground. That's why. I love these motherfuckers that drive these Priuses around Los Angeles, think they're being green, and they got a cigarette hanging out the goddamn window, and they take one last drag, and they flick it on the ground. If you're so fucking green, then you would never, ever think to deposit a cigarette on the pavement of the streets of Los Angeles, California, and say, but there's not an ashtray in the Prius, Steve. Hey, put your can of water in that motherfucker. If you're responsible enough to buy the sumbitch, light it and smoke it, you're responsible enough to put it in its proper place in the trash receptacle, not on the fucking main streets of my city, Los Angeles.
That's right. That's right.
Sean, let's wrap this thing up. I'm going to bring this show to a close. We had a good conversation here today, but I want to thank you for joining me here on the show. 2020 is kicking off to be a good year. We've got a lot of cool guests coming up on the show. Sean hosts his own podcast with his wife called The Worst Collection Ever. It's a comic book podcast where they break down, get heat on all the comic books out there. Every week, this show drops on Thursdays on Apple Podcasts. And wherever you can find a podcast, you will find Sean and Jen have a podcast called The Worst Collection Ever. I know you're on social media. Where can we find you?
I am at Angry Hero Sean, and Sean is spelled S-H-A-W-N. It's all one word, Angry Hero Sean. Twitter, Instagram, I typically take pictures of comic books and post them, as well as retweet some awesome wrestling stuff. I try to keep up on it, but yeah. Come find me over there.
You know, dude, before we go, RVD is a huge comic book fan, big collector.
Yes.
He's supposed to come back on the show. He was going to come while I was down taking a break. And so next time he comes to Los Angeles, we will visit with RVD.
Rob's doing some wild stuff, too. He's an Impact, and he's doing some wild stuff I've been seeing. So that should be fun.
I need to check it out. Where can I find Impact?
If you go on the Impact YouTube channel, if you look up Impact on YouTube, you should find some clips on there. He's doing some kind of character where he's got his girlfriend and he's making out with his girlfriend. It's just kind of being more of like a carefree playboy kind of character, but also still being RVD.
That sounds interesting. I got to check that out. I got to see Rob's range. Rob's a chill dude. He's a great guy. All right, Sean. Hell, looking forward to 2020. Good talking with you.
Likewise, Steven. Thank you for having me on. Thank you for the podcast, too, man. Just want to say it's an honor and a privilege to talk to a national treasure and a global icon.
You fucked it up. It's a global icon and a national treasure. I can't believe you botched it. We ain't going to fix it in post. We're leaving it just like that. And that's the bottom line, because I said so. All right, everybody, give me the go home cue. It's time to wrap up this podcast and ride off in the sunset. Oh, it's great to be back here in 2020. Now, every single Tuesday, first real show of the new year. Good to be back. I want to thank my guest today, my producer, Sean Merrick, host of the podcast with his wife, Jen, Worst Collection Ever. Find it on Apple Podcasts or wherever podcasts are found. They drop this show every single Thursday. Hey, don't forget to rate and review the Steve Austin Show on Apple Podcasts and tell your friends to check us out. If you want to reach me here on a podcast, send an email to questions@steveaustinshow.com. Good news. Broken Skull IPA from El Segundo Brewing Company is spreading across the United States of America, one state at a time. We're all over the whole state of California, moving into Oregon. We're on the East Coast in Massachusetts, New Jersey, and New York. Looking to plow into some other states, probably about 6 or 8 in 2020. Go to the ElSegundoBrewing.com website. Look on their interactive map. Find out when we're headed your way and where you can find the best IPA in America, and that's the bottom line. King of Attitude shirts, Broken Skull Ranch apparel at ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin. If you're looking for a badass pocket knife, which I feel everyone should own, the Cold Steel Broken Skull Knife or the Working Man's Knife are available at my Amazon store. Amazon got the best price on both knives. Just go to Amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin. And I want to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show, especially Geico, ZipRecruiter, and BetOnline.ag. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. Please support them because they support us. If you need more info, check out the show description to this episode for details. When you see me riding in the woods out there across the mountains, I'll be riding a Kawasaki. Until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.